Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
Hello again, everybody. My name is James Stewart. We have a special bonus episode of Wrestling Inside the Ropes. Mike and I made the drive up to Kowloon to meet WWE Hall of Famer Jimmy Hart. Jimmy is going to be doing a meet and greet on Saturday, October 13th from 4 to 8 p.m. at Kowloon. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. So here's our conversation with Jimmy Hart. I start by asking him about Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Well, of course, I had so many teammates back in New York, but the Hart Foundation was definitely a major part of it, Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and, of course, myself as their manager. But, you know, I have a beach bar in Daytona Beach, Florida, called Jimmy Hart's Hall of Fame Bar and Tiki Deck. The Anvil lived in Tampa, Florida, about an hour and a half away, and we just had a great run together, man. It was just such a great time with Bret Hart, Neidhart, and myself. And like I said before, I had so many different people. You know, I had Hulk and Brutus, of course. I had the Nasty Boys. I had the Rougeau Brothers. I had Earthquake and Typhoon, Dino Bravo, Adrian Adonis, and the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, the Honky Tonk Man, just to mention a few. So we had a great run.
There's always this rumor about the Bulldogs would only drop the championships to the Hart Foundation. Is that something that you heard? Is that something you were aware of?
No, absolutely not. We did drop the belts to us, of course, but look, Vince runs that show. Whoever he wanted to do, whatever, that's what they did. Trust me on that one.
Is there a great road story of Bret and Jim during that particular run? Is there a favorite match of theirs that jumped out to you?
Well, the favorite match for me was the one at WrestleMania 3. We were in Detroit in front of 93,000-plus people, and the Bulldogs with Tito Santana were against Dangerous Danny Davis, the referee, myself, and, of course, Bret Hart and Neidhart, and that was a great match. But one of the matches was in White Plains, New York, which was kind of crazy. We had a little referee there, and he was wearing a toupee, right? And before the match, Arnold Skolin, who had the town that was there, and he goes, listen, whatever you do, do not touch this guy's toupee. So we weren't planning on doing anything, but Neidhart was late coming to the matches. When he did, he had the tape that he was wrapping around his elbow, and he was wrapping it so fast that some of the tape got turned around backwards. Well, we got the Rougeaus in the corner before I managed them, and the referee got between them. Neidhart threw the punch over the top of the guy's head. When he did, when he pulled his arm back, the tape got stuck to the guy's toupee and pulled it off. When it did, I jumped under the ring laughing. Bret Hart jumped in the ring. They had to stop the match. It was so crazy. We got in the back. They tried to fine us, suspend us, and everything. But I think Arnold kind of gave him a few $100 and the referee and told him it was an accident. But that was one of the crazy stories that we had with the Hart Foundation in White Plains.
Jimmy, speaking of WrestleMania, you were part of the first ever WrestleMania. You managed King Kong Bundy at Madison Square Garden. There were so many pop culture icons for the first ever Mania. What was going through your mind leading up to that event there and to see how it's taken off since WrestleMania 1?
And I had Greg the Hammer Valentine there, too. You forgot about
right.
that. Yeah,
right.
So I had the
some
Hammer.
Of the guys
and I know it. But you know what? I just left Memphis, Tennessee with Jerry Lawler and Andy Coppin, and I just started in New York about a month before that. And it was great walking into Madison Square Garden, and all of a sudden on my right there's Liberace, on my left there's Muhammad Ali, and there's Billy Martin over there, and there's Dick Clark, who I toured with my group The Gentries many, many years before that. We had a million-seller record, for those who don't know, with a group called The Gentries, and called Keep On Dancing, and we did all the Dick Clark tours with the Beach Boys, Sonny and Cher, and all them. So it was great to see everybody once again. Cyndi Lauper was there, of course, but it was just such a thrill for me. Who knows that I'd still be working with the WWE after all these years, you know?
It's pretty crazy, and to see how it's grown from that time period there, and now where it's at, a legitimate worldwide empire.
Well, you know, in my beach bar in Daytona, every Monday night we watch Raw, SmackDown on Tuesday nights, of course, and we have all the pay-per-views there, but some of the talent they've got now is just phenomenal. They're awesome, man. I love watching AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. you know, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, just all the guys are just tremendous, you know. So every now and then when I go out and do autographs for them still, and I do WrestleMania every year. This past year we were in New Orleans, and I did the Hall of Fame inductions for Hillbilly Jim, of course, and it's just great to see everybody again.
Do you have any specific memories of the old Boston Garden? You guys were here at least once or twice a month back in the day, or once a month, once every other month, more or less, but a lot during that circuit here. I know, Northeast Territory here, WWF, WWE, so Boston always gets a pretty good show every time they roll into town.
Well, Boston was so great at the Gardens because the dressing room we got to dress in was the one that Larry Bird and the whole, you know, Boston Celtics got to dress in, so it was great sitting by his locker. It was just a thrill. It was so much history with that. And going to the ring, the fans were just awesome. Every seat was a close seat, and the fans, you know, they'd throw stuff at you, but they were just so vocal. But that's how passionate the fans are.
Yeah. And, you know, like you were saying, you worked with so many giants in the industry. I mean, I know you mentioned all the guys at the top there, but even in Memphis, Randy Savage, Rick Rude, Lanny Poffo, any particular one of those guys your favorite? The Million Dollar Man, IRS, they were in there too. Any guys you had a favorite with? And you had so many jackets too.
Well, you know, when I started in Memphis, Tennessee, I managed the Iron Sheik. I managed Rick Rude, King Kong Bundy, Jim the Anvil Neidhart down there. We had him as one of the Oakland Raiders down there. But I had all of them down there before I went to New York. And then, of course, I went to New York. That's when I had the other crew. But wound up managing Hulk and Brutus, of course. And Hulk and I have been friends since Memphis, almost 39, 40 years now. So it's been a good run for me, and I've just been so blessed and so lucky. And even being back here at Calhoun's, you know, this, well, if you, like you said, if you listen to it tonight, it's tomorrow at 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And if you listen to it tomorrow, it's still from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock. So come by, get an autographed picture, say hello to us. If you got an action figure, bring it by. We'll sign it for you. We might even do a small Q&A session here. But definitely come by. Let's talk about some of the great memories in Boston here or wherever you might be from. But like I said, we'll be here from 4 o'clock tomorrow at Calhoun's till 8 o'clock tomorrow night. So please come by and see us.
You mentioned your relationship with Hulk. And for me, the wrestling fan, how different was it from you going from the bad guy manager for so many years in the WWF, now the WWE, to managing Hulk and being that good guy manager versus that bad guy manager?
Well, you know what? Whatever the promoter wanted, it didn't really matter to me, but it was kind of a little bit of change. But I still got to wear the colorful jackets. I still got to carry the megaphone. Everybody always asks, where did you get the megaphone? Vince went to Japan and brought the megaphone back for me to use, and he let me paint it any color we wanted to use it. Thank God he didn't bring me a piano. Can't you imagine me carrying a piano on the road everywhere? Oh, my gosh. But it was great. And, you know, it's so funny. We were talking about watching the football game the other night. We were watching the Philadelphia play the Giants, and right before halftime, I believe, right when they were going to try to trick the other team and maybe jumping off sides, Wentz, the quarterback for Philly, he goes, Hulk Hogan, Hulk Hogan, trying to get the team to jump, and of course they didn't do it. But then Troy Aikman, who did some commercials with him, with Hulkster, of course, this year, talked about it too. But it just shows you how big that name still is with Hulk Hogan and how strong it is after all these years.
Hulk is the number one on the Mount Rushmore, I think, as far as professional wrestling goes. And the transition from WWF, then WWE, now to WCW, what was that like for you and Hulk? And how did that phone call with Vince McMahon go, telling him that you were leaving for WCW?
Well, it really didn't happen that way. What happened, we had left WWF back then to go do a TV show called Thunder in Paradise. While we were at Disney shooting the show, Eric Bischoff and Ric Flair came by, and Ric Flair said, look, Eric, if we want to turn WCW around, we've got to get Hulk in there. And so what happened, they called Ted Turner. Ted Turner said, I'd love to have him. So we'd kind of already left to do the Thunder in Paradise TV show. So it really wasn't a big major plan or anything. It just kind of fell into place. So we went to WCW, and we did that for like 6 years. But it was a great run with Hulk being Hulk, of course. Then the NWO turned out to be a gold mine. And so it just turned out to be really great. We had a good run down there. And, of course, now we're back in the saddle again with the WWE. So it's awesome.
And you also managed Ric Flair for a little bit in the WCW. I know that was a storyline where you turned on the Hulkster after that. Well, you won Bash of the Beach, but then you ended up managing two of the greatest of all time in the WCW. That's quite an honor for you.
Well, it was. And you know what's so weird, too? I've got to be the worst manager in the world if you really think about it. I turned on all of my champions. The Hart Foundation were the champions. I turned on them to go through the Rude Shows and Nasty Boys. Yeah. Then I turned on the Nasty Boys when they were the champions. I turned on Hulk in WCW when he was the champ.
Money Inc.
I turned on Money Inc. Yeah. Well, that wasn't. That was kind of an upgrade too, because I managed Hulk and Brutus after that. So, but I've had such a great run. Plus, doing the music too. You know, I did the theme song "Sexy Boy" for Shawn Michaels. Right. I did the one for Money, Money, Money for Money Inc. Money Incorporated, of course, DiBiase and them. Then we did the Wolf Pack for Nash and Hall. We did a lot of songs for WCW, the Nitro Girls themes. We did the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes' song. Mm-hmm. We did Honky Tonk Man songs, and so Road Warriors. So we've had a good run all the way around.
A lot of that stuff is on the wrestling album. That's a good one that came out in the 80s. That was a darn good album.
Yeah, they just released one of the wrestling albums, too. A couple of the wrestling albums, really. I think we had two out, and they just released them again, too. So it's kind of great to go back every now and then. You hear some of the old songs that we were able to be part of.
Can I ask you this, Jimmy? I don't know if a lot of people know, but you actually managed some female wrestlers back in 1987.
The Glamour Girls.
Yes.
Judy Martin and Lonnie Cobb. We sure did.
Right. And, you know, look at the whole, again, how it's become an empire here for the female division. Their own pay-per-view is coming up at the end of the month. What are your thoughts on that, with the growth of that?
Well, it really is. And plus, when I wasn't in WWE for a while, we put a show together, me and my friend of mine, Johnny Caparella, that used to be the producers of GLOW. We had a show called Wrestlicious, and we had that out for a while. And so, like I said, I'm glad to see the women really get a push now. You know, one of my favorite up there is Alicia Fox. She works so hard. I mean, she has different outfits. She reminds me of the Jimmy Hart of wrestling. She has, of course, a lot of different outfits. She comes out every week to something different. She never wins. I don't know why, but she's awesome. But all the girls are tremendous, you know. I really like all of them. They do a great job.
I got to ask you this real quick. How many megaphones do you own?
Well, I probably got about 15 left, but back in the day, Vince had a giant box of Mr. Fuji Kane's, Honky Tonk Man's guitars, and, of course, Jimmy Hart's megaphones, because we went through them so much. But through the years, I've kept quite a bit.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, do you have a favorite one in particular, or the sport coat, too?
Well, you know, I have so many different jackets. I have the Money Inc. jackets. I have the Hulk Hogan jacket still. The ones I'll be wearing tomorrow, when you come see me from 4 to 8 o'clock at Calhoun's, I'll have the Jimmy Hart, I'll have the black jacket with the red hearts on it, and also I'll have the Jimmy Hart megaphone, and I'm bringing the original Honky Tonk Man belt signed by Hulk Hogan that we'll take pictures with. So whenever you come by to get a picture made, we're going to put the belt on you, and we're going to let you hold the Jimmy Hart megaphone, and I'll be in my Jimmy Hart jacket. So you got to come by, see us, bring your action figures, bring your old pictures. We've got new pictures for you, so please come by to say hello to us.
The Honky Tonk Man, the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. What was that like, working with him night in, night out, and kind of the beginning of the Honky Tonk Man era in WWF, and kind of the end where he lost the championship?
This is what the real deal was. I had the Honky Tonk, well, he was called Wayne Ferris back in Memphis, and he went as the Kisser down there. He was kind of like doing a Kiss gimmick called the Kisser, and Kevin Sullivan. When they left, you know, I went to New York, and later on when Honky came in, he had a new gimmick called the Honky Tonk Man. He had started in Pensacola, Florida. So it was a natural. They put us together. I was the colonel. He was the Honky Tonk Man. And so we had a great run down there. And then we had kept it for about a year. And then we had the little program with the Ultimate Warrior in Madison Square Garden. So that turned out to be great. But it was a great run that we had. Kept the belt for about a year. And the Honky Tonk was very colorful. And back in that area, I learned something from Dick Clark when I was traveling. He said, look, anytime you're an entertainer on the stage or anything, remember, if you're dressed like the audience, one day you're going to wind up sitting in the audience. So that's why I always like to have all my guys that were colorful. If you look at DiBiase, colorful with $1 million jackets. If you look at Honky, colorful. Look at Hulk, even though it's just a yellow tights and a yellow T-shirt, but still very, very colorful. And most of my guys were like that.
Was Honky Tonk Man originally supposed to be a good guy, and the crowd just, they didn't react the way that Vince thought that they were going to react to him?
I think originally when he came in, I think that was what was supposed to happen. But then once they put us together, of course, we really got boos in because people had hated me so much back then with the megaphone and everything, and then and Honky too. So, but it really worked out great. I took him back to Memphis, Tennessee. We went to Sun Studios. We cut some of his hits there. We cut the videos there at Graceland. A good friend of mine that was a friend of Elvis, that I got to meet Elvis a couple of times back then, and Jerry Lee Lewis. But We were able to go to the Graceland and cut the videos and stuff, so it really turned out to be a great package for us.
You know, when people think of wrestling managers, you're right up there for the Mount Rushmore. I'd throw Bobby Heenan up there. I'd throw Miss Elizabeth, maybe. Sensational Sherry, just to name a few. Paul Heyman nowadays, Jim Cornette. Jimmy Hart's right up there, number one, going into the industry. I mean, did you ever envision yourself to be one of the greatest of all time, maybe even go as far as you've come to in the industry this long?
Well, you forgot Fred Blassie, Lou Albano,
yeah,
Mr. Fuji.
Quite a few.
But I love Jimmy
Paul
Cornette. I love Jimmy Cornette. I've always loved Paul Heyman. I think he did so much for ECW, and he's such a great talker, too, and everything, and so is Jimmy Cornette, too. But, like I said, just to be mentioned with any of those guys is a thrill for me.
And a Hall of Famer, too.
Yeah, being in the Hall of Famer in 2005, me, Hulk Hogan, the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper, Paul Orndorff, Cowboy Bob Horton, and Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik.
Wow. We just lost this year, too, Nikolai just died.
I know, and I was with him 2 weeks before he passed away, and, you know, we were talking, and he goes, Jimmy, you got your weight down. I said, yeah. He goes, I don't eat meat. And I said, well, I don't either. And he said, look, I said, no matter what kind of vitamins you're taking, Nikolai, I said, the Iron Sheik will probably outlive both of us.
Wow. Now, I got to tell you, ask you real quick. I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you could see one dream match and manage one particular wrestler, who would it be?
Well, I'd love to see
dream
a
match.
I'd love to see a triple threat match between Hulk Hogan, The Rock, and Stone Cold.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be unbelievable. Refereed by Vince McMahon.
Whoa.
Commentating, I'd love to see Jimmy Cornette and Paul Heyman do the commentating on that match.
Wow.
And I'd like to be sitting at ringside. And then whoever won, I'd like to be the one to run in and raise their hand.
Do you have a good Vince McMahon story from your run, either more recently or back in the 80s and 90s?
Well, a quick story, a true story. One day Pat Patterson came to me and said, look, Vince said he wants you to start managing Dino Bravo. And I went, what? Oh, but all I wanted to do, I was excited about doing it, but I just wanted to take Dino and dress him up, you know. And so they were kidding with me and went back and told Vince that they said Jimmy didn't want to manage him. And I never said that. I was excited about getting him. I just wanted to go ahead. And I said, what? Like, I was great to have him because I liked the single guys and the tag matches. And so they kidded me all day. Vince goes, I can't believe you don't. I said, no, Vince, I do. I do want to manage him. I said, but I want to, can I dress him up? Do what you want it to. So I remember seeing this old magazine of these old-timey circus guys like weightlifters. So we made him the Florida Leaf cape. We made him the tights with that. We made him the weightlifting belt, those things that went on your arms, and we made him the world's strongest wrestler, and it turned out to be great.
Jimmy, I just got to tell you this. We were talking before about Bruce Pritchard, who has a very successful podcast, formerly Brother Love, but he said on his podcast not too long ago, mentioning you, he said Jimmy Hart was always the first one at the building and the last one to leave.
And the reason why, because I always rode with the referees, the Hebner boys, and they would always be there first, and they would always laugh, because I didn't want to be – listen, I was so grateful to be part of the WWF, WWE, that I wanted to be on time. I wanted to be dependable. Whatever they wanted to do, if they wanted to paint me yellow, I'd buy the paint. If they wanted to tar and feather me, I'd buy the feathers. It didn't matter to me. I just wanted to make sure whatever I did, we left an impression. Like Dick Clark said, if you dress like the audience, one day you're going to wind up sitting in the audience.
Bruce also told the story about how when you would get pantsed, you would cover up both the bottom and the top.
Right.
What was just the thinking of that, or was that just something that you just kind of came up with just to add a little bit more additional comedy?
Because I knew that 30 years from after that happened, when I was talking to a couple of good DJs, Sarge and Jimmy on the radio show, they would bring that up, and I realized being from Memphis that it wasn't the biggest guy that got some attention. It wasn't the smartest guy sometimes. It's what you did that the people on TV related to. You know what I mean? And a lot of guys never really wanted to poke fun at themselves or be this, that, and the other. But I was there to entertain the people, and I really took it seriously. And I just always realized that if you do the things that are going to get their attention after the show's over, that's what they're going to talk about more than anything else.
We were talking earlier about the women's revolution now, and you were talking about the Glamour Girls who you were managing, and they had a great tag team opponent in the Jumping Bomb Angels, and there was Survivor Series 87 and the Rumble in 88, or maybe I have my years off, but they had these great series of matches. Were the Jumping Bomb Angels, like, before their time, like, would they be more successful now in this era? Because I think of the Jumping Bomb Angels, and I think of the British Bulldogs, and just teams that were doing all this innovative stuff.
When the Angels came in, the way we put the Glamour Girls together, we didn't really have a lot of girls that were wrestled, so they were looking for a team to fight them. There were really no teams, so I talked to Pat and them and let me bleach their hair. We got them gold outfits, and I called them the Glamour Girls, and we wrote a song for the Glamour Girls. And so they let us do that, and it was such a great match. Matter of fact, I saw one of those oldie but goodie matches on the network the other day of the Bomb Angels fighting the the Jumping Bomb Angels. And everything was so solid and so stiff and looked so good. It's so different when you see them. And, of course, at the end of every match, they always gave me a big drop kick on the end of it, you know, which was great. So, but it was just great to go back and rewatch those matches. Matter of fact, I just saw Alani Kai about a month ago. She came by our bar with her husband, and so it was just great to see them.
One other thing, you're talking about coloring people's hair. How much did Greg Valentine hate having his hair darkened and being part of, maybe not teaming with the Honky Tonk Man, but the hair being part of Rhythm and Blues?
Well, what happened is Greg had a great run up there. I was managing him too, and he had a great run before me, but we kind of reached the end of it. Honky was doing the single thing, and we wanted to put them together as a tag. And so, you know, Jesse the Body came up with that idea, really. And so at first, Greg didn't want to do it. And so finally, I said, look, Greg, we can do it like this. We can get the spray that we can spray your hair and wash it out every couple of days. So he went with it then. So I got the black spray for it, and we did it. But it turned out to be a good little run for us.
There's a great story of WrestleMania 6 when you debuted the Honka Honka Honky Love, I believe, was the title of the song, and how the Pink Cadillac ended up there. And ironically enough, you're going to later work with Diamond Dallas Page. Can you just tell that story to those who might not know about the Pink Cadillac at WrestleMania 6 in Toronto, driving Rhythm and Blues to the ring?
Yeah, like you said, it was in Toronto, and we had a match. Well, we really were just going to go out and do a singing deal on it, but then the Bushwhackers came out and interrupted us. But what happened is we needed a pink Cadillac. There was one in Tampa, Florida. So Diamond Dallas Page said, look, y'all can use the Cadillac, but I want to drive it up there. But that's the one thing about Diamond Dallas. He did anything it took to try to make it in the wrestling business. He managed. He wrestled every night. He was always on time, always dependable. He's got that DDP yoga now going on too, which is doing a great job. He's helped so many people like Jake Roberts and Scott Hall and those guys. And so, but Diamond, like I said, he was always on time. He was dependable. He did everything the right way. So I was glad to see him be part of that.
One more. Now I got to ask you one more question. What is the most memorable event you've been a part of in your career?
Well, it still has to be WrestleMania 1, because if WrestleMania 1 had not been successful, we wouldn't be standing here talking today, because that's what really kicked everything off. Nobody knew if it was going to be a hit, if it was going to be a flop, and it turned out to be unbelievable, really. And here we are 35, 36 years later, it's still going strong.
Yeah. In New York this April, too, for WrestleMania 35.
Back again in New York.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hart is going to be at Kowloon if you're listening to this on Friday night. It'll be 4 to 8 p.m. on Saturday. If you're listening to it Saturday morning, it's later today, 4 to 8. And if you're listening to this on Sunday, you've missed it, but hopefully you won't. And Jimmy, one final everything that you're going to have tomorrow for the people who come by Kowloon from 4 to 8.
Well, first of all, go Patriots! I can say it up here now, because when I say it down in Tampa down there, I've got to be really careful of who I like and who I don't like. But the Patriots, please, I hope they win. I love them. And but let me go back to the other 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock on Saturday here at Kowloon's. Bring your pictures if you want me to sign them. We'll have pictures also. We'll take pictures with you guys. We got the Honky Tonk Man's original championship belt signed by Hulk Hogan. We're going to put that on you to take pictures with you. We got the Jimmy Hart megaphone here, and we got the jackets. We got everything. So please come by and say hello to us from 4 to 8 o'clock. That's going to be Saturday at Kowloon's. Unbelievable food here. You got to check out the menus here. They've got everything. It's going to be a great time, great place. And, Sarge, I'm sure you and Jimmy will be coming by to say hello to us, too.
Can't wait. And I'll tell you what, even for people that are listening after the autograph session, plug your bar again if people are ever down in Daytona Beach.
Daytona Beach, baby. Jimmy Hart's Hall of Fame Bar and Tiki Deck. Come on down. We've got all kind of memorabilia on the walls. You will not believe it. We got all kind of jerseys on the wall. And it's just a great opportunity to come down, look at the ocean and everything else. And I feel so bad for the poor people that got wiped out on the other part of Florida down there, right, too. My heart's out to them. But once again, Patriots, please win this ball game for me. I love you guys. I really do. So I want them to win. Brady and Gronk, I mean, two of my favorites. And just I just hope they pull this off. I'm sure they will.
Jimmy Hart, thank you so much, WWE Hall of Famer.
My new tag team. Thank you,
guys.
Yeah,
now we're talking.